You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
Today, we have Shauna the Tax Goddess.
Well, hello.
Well, how about that? But before we start, Shauna, on what is going to be a very interesting journey, I'm sure, I have to ask you, what is that instrument of torture? It looks like a Klingon weapon or something. But right behind your left ear, against the wall, is a... What is it? What is it used for? And why is it in your office?
Yes, sir. So that is called a Kwan Do. When I was 16, I started training in Northern Shaolin Kung Fu. And by the time I got to college, I was a weapons expert in 23 weapons, ancient Chinese weapons. And this was my favorite. So originally, you would ride around on horseback and you can kind of see the top of it. There's a giant claw. Yeah. You could take people out at the knees and that would be the end of it. So my staff has told me, don't mess with Shauna. And I think they have the right idea.
Yeah, I think that's a fairly persuasive approach to take, really, isn't it?
Just a bit.
Yeah. I mean, the Chinese, they knew what they were doing, didn't they, with their instruments of horseback-induced death. Yeah. So does that mean like you're a 19th Dan black belt or something now?
No, unfortunately. So I just made it to black belt and then I had to stop. So I've thought about going back, but it's been a bit.
But it's just, yeah, you know, presumably you don't forget. It's like riding a bicycle, isn't it?
There are certainly pieces of it. You do not want to surprise me in the kitchen while I have a knife in my hand. That is for
right,
sure.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So is this used as a negotiating tactic or is it a part of client onboarding?
Do what I tell you to do or else. No, yeah. I suppose the other side to that is I'm originally Canadian, so I'm probably one of the nicest people you'll ever meet. So I suppose this is just for backup. It's absolutely
so I'm the nicest person you're ever going to meet. However, I do have a slightly dark side, which means I will amputate your head should you surprise me in the kitchen.
Sure. Oh, something
that's
like
fine.
That.
Well, I think the important thing is to get that out of the way. And then, by the way, I can save you a ton of money on your taxes.
Oh, by the way.
I only had two questions, really. Nothing like being prepared. And that's nothing like being prepared. But my other question really is, tax is an incredibly complex. What is it within one that, I mean, because, you know, tax is, you know, everyone has this sort of standard sort of CPA jokes. But actually, tax is an incredibly complex, ancient set of regulation that goes back since the beginning of time. What was it in particular that drew you to that, as opposed to something like law or other types of structures that are similar?
Definitely a good question. So I actually started off in astrophysics. So I've always had a numbers mindset. It just suits my brain the way that it works. And when I switched from the sciences into the business end, went for both finance and accounting. Accounting is the most boring thing ever because it's reporting history. I almost went back to the sciences on the astrophysics side, but then I found tax because tax is a very specific set of rules. You're trying to get to a goal, but you can move the chess pieces however you want them to move to get where you want to go. And that's what's fascinating about it for me. It's a game.
You know, physics, it's a set of rules where you find the rules. So I don't think anyone really knew what the, what the rules were and probably still don't. But again, you experiment in the light of known rules. So I suppose the outcome sort of human created as opposed to been there since time immemorial. But what sort of led you? When was that first moment? I'm just curious, to find out when did you sort of discover the attraction of that sort of structure?
It was actually back in college, right? When I took a tax class because I was about to give up. I had looked at law, I had looked at finance, I had looked at accounting, and it was to me boring. I'm glad other people like it, but for me, it was absolutely boring. There was just no creativity. There was nothing new that I could add based on what I had seen. And so in this tax class, this one professor brought up a case and my response to his case, he actually said, I've never had anybody think about it like that, but yeah, that would work. And I went, I can rock this. Yes. Let's go. Right. So it made it fun. Like I said, it was very much a game for me and I like the challenge. We look at everything on an aggression scale viewpoint. So you've got zero, the IRS never calls you, never, ever. And you get 10, meaning we're all going to jail. How do we go to an 8? We're still legal, but we're pushing the envelope without going to a 9 or a 10 or into that kind of darker area. It's a lot of fun from that standpoint.
If you look at your typical client, because you know, the smaller businessman, for example, is just going to have the standard sort of CPA reporting. Where are the areas, having spent a number of years now working with this environment, is there a particular area that springs out of being particular interest to you within the tax legislation?
Absolutely. So for me, it's about how do we apply the rules that the big boys use to the little guy? Okay. Some very small, simple things, right? Do you have a kid? Let's put the kid to work in the business, right? We can get $18,000 a year of tax-free income for every child over the age of 7. Fantastic. How can we use your house? Okay. Most people think about, okay, well, I have mortgage interest. Fine. That's the deduction. No, the senators and the congressmen actually wrote their own law called the master's exemption. You want 14 days at $3,000 a year or $3,000 an event tax-free? You can do that. We've got a client taking about $140,000 a year just because he owns a house 100% tax-free. So look up the master's exemption. So there are rules that the big, big companies get to use that. So I'm ex-KPMG.
Yeah.
Right? One of the big four remaining giant accounting firms. I never thought it was fair that only the big boys got these types of strategies. And so, you know, my family, German, for 800 years, we've been in some sort of small business. Okay, how do we take those same rules and apply and tweak and get into those nitty-gritty corners to find every dollar? Because especially the small business, they need it. They need the money.
And why is it that these types of regulations are only available or only visible to the large organizations?
Typically, only the large organizations pay people like me. That's one of the biggest things. The knowledge is out there, right? But for your normal business owner, they're more focused on how do I get clients and build my widget than they are reading all of the tax laws and keeping up with the changes. You know, every single day, I get 3 emails a day with IRS changes, state law changes, what's going on with international law that applies to the US? You can't. So unless you're a specialist, really the big boys have the money to pay people like me and the little guys never have. So
this is really about discovery then. So this is not about you simply regurgitating known regulations.
No
it's
way.
About you effectively researching the laws there and discovering anomalies or opportunities. This goes back to what your original tax class tutors discovered.
Yep, exactly. Well, and I think that's the biggest issue here is that no single tax plan is going to fit every single person, right? If you're married, it's different. If you have kids, it's different. If you have a business or have rental properties or invest in crypto, every single tax law fits your custom situation different. Sure, there are some tax strategies that work across all businesses, but those are the ones that your standard CPAs know. Let's put money in a 401k or buy you a car this year. That'll reduce your taxes. If you really want to start looking at 40, 50, 60, 200, $300,000 in tax reductions, it's got to be custom. You can't do that with an off-the-shelf software.
Yeah, and so all the software like the TurboTax and all the stuff that most people are familiar with really are just scratching the surface in terms of what is possible. And do you think that most people really don't have the right approach when it comes to looking at their tax? Do they assume that TurboTax, if it's not in there, then it's not available to them?
You got it. You got it. And I think that's really the deal. When you're looking at TurboTax or a CPA, a tax preparation CPA, right?
Yeah.
Their job is not to find you strategies. A tax strategist is a completely separate professional. So TurboTax's job is to gather your data, put it on a form, and let you file it. CPA's job is to gather your data, maybe ask you some questions because something seems weird, then put it on the form, then file it. A tax strategist's job is to dig into every detail. I want to talk to your financial advisor, your insurance planner, your estate attorney. I want to speak with your real estate broker. I want to speak with your financial team to understand who are you, what do you do, what are your goals, where are you trying to go, then to be able to create a plan that we're all working together, hopefully minimizing taxes along the way, which is the whole point from our perspective.
And that sort of is like a 3D model, effectively. It's very similar to the sort of models that you would normally see in astrophysics, for example, or the sciences. And again, they're not. What you're doing is you're using the same approach. In other words, let's look at all of the information available and create a strategy from that, rather than just looking at a limited snapshot of something that could be irrelevant.
Absolutely. I mean, we can look at a limited snapshot, but if the choice is between me saving you $1,000 with a limited snapshot or $100,000 because we look at some detail, which would you choose?
So. Yeah, precisely. But the next point really is a typical client's perspective. Mm-hmm. Who would you say you most want to work with in terms of, there are people that you get offered with, but who is your target? Who is the company that you would prefer to work with more than any other?
It's got to be business owners. And I'll be very upfront with it. The IRS tax code, the US tax code, is written for business owners. If you're a W-2, you're effectively left out of 95% of tax strategies that could apply. So it's a business owner. Maybe they have 1 to 2 to 20, 25 staff. They're pulling maybe 500,000 to 10 million in gross revenues, somewhere there. The biggest thing is that the owner has gone to their CPA, right? Keep the CPA relationship. We want you to have somebody that you trust that is on your side to look at these things. But you've gone to your CPA and you've said, you know, listen, I'm paying taxes out the ears, right? I've done it for years. I'm done. I want to do something about it. I'm tired of the government having my money. That's probably the key. Because, you know, we've done deals. The largest deal we've ever done was a $229 million business sale. Smallest client I've ever helped was making $1,000 a year. So it's really a very broad range, but it more comes down to you have a business in the first place, right? And you want to do something about it. You're tired of handing over your money to the government.
Is it really that type of subjective choice? Because again, looking at something absolute like science, for example, sure, you don't say that I'm studying astrophysics because I'm tired of being blinded by moonlight. It's there because it's there to be studied. So do you have issues with people that try and put a moral code on what you're doing, saying you shouldn't be finding ways of avoiding? And there's, you know, so two-part question. Number one, the moralist approach, you know, how do you counter that as a scientist? You know, secondly, the sort of avoid, evade question, and what are the separations between those two key words?
Well, let's start with the first one, the moral issue. Everybody gets a choice, right? I'm certainly not going out preaching and saying you must reduce your taxes to the bare legal minimum. Choose what you want to choose, right? We have some clients that come to us, we tell them, okay, here are the things we can do. And they say, you know what? I'm kind of good with my state getting that government funding because that means the schools are getting funding and I'm fine with that. It's your choice. Everything we do is your choice. Our entire job is to bring you options and your choice is to choose them, right? So whichever one you want to do or not do, it's completely up to the client. So from a moral standpoint, you're going to have that argument, right? The government should be charging this tax. Great, pay it, right? For many of us, we look at it and we say, listen, if some of our government is only paying 2% tax, if they're doing it, I'm going to do it. Let's do it. I want the 2% tax rate, right? Let's go get that. To kind of come in the middle there, and I think that's where your second question comes in, the difference between tax avoidance and tax evasion, because those are two hugely distinct words. Tax avoidance is we are still doing everything legal, right? Kind of going back to that aggression scale, right? We'll go to an 8. We're going to push the envelope, right? But I'm not going, like, you seem very nice, right? But I'm not going to jail for you. It's not happening, right? Yeah. So we'll give you all the legal strategies, but every T is crossed and every I is dotted. Absolutely. That's avoidance. Evasion is now you're going into the 9 and the 10, and you're hoping the IRS doesn't catch you for something that you know is wrong, something that you know is not good.
And how much of what you do is down to interpretation as opposed to simple application of clearly understood rules?
I'm actually going to say probably about 80% of what we do for most people is straight up application. Their CPAs never told them about it. They didn't know about it. We're just tweaking or changing or doing whatever we're doing. There's definitely about 20% of the cases where now this is a specific interpretation, right? It requires a lot more research. This is why I've got an entire team. I've got a staff of 62. So it requires a lot more research, really digging into the details, you know, down to the fact in some cases, we might have the client keep a written ledger of exactly they spent 15 minutes on the phone with us on this day. And that one little fact is going to make a difference in their fact pattern to be able to take a deduction. So it can really range all the way around. But I'd say 80% of it is just either a client CPA didn't know any better, so never told the client. That happens all the time. There are 660,000 CPAs in the US. They're not all tax experts. There's only 607 people in the entire US that do what I do, right? So you can't assume they're all going to know all of the rules all the way around in tax. And on the other side of that, then it just becomes up to the client. You know, what do you want to do? How much, where does that aggression scale go? You might have a client at a level 3. I want to do some stuff, but I want to stay like way away from the IRS. Fine. Let's do a level 3. You're still going to get more than where you're at.
And in your experience in dealing with the IRS, how much, again, the question of interpretation, is interpretation a two-edged sword? You can interpret it one way. The IRS will interpret it the other way. Is theirs always going to be the absolute? Are they always correct? Or how easy or successful can one be challenging an IRS interpretation of a particular rule that is quite gray?
And you're right. It does kind of come down to what are they challenging, right? So if you go, you've got the base level, right? You do something on a tax return, you get an audit. That's kind of your basic level. IRS agent comes out or sends you a letter and says, prove to us why you're allowed to do what you're allowed to do. Okay, so that's your basic level. Now, at that level, you can have green agents, brand new agents that are trying to prove their muster to their bosses. They will fight you tooth and nail, right? Or you get the other end of that spectrum, but they've been doing it for 20 years and they're like, yeah, whatever, it's fine. You know, so that's just talk about subjective. You have no idea which agent's going to show up. Now, as you go up that scale, right, you can go from an agent, you can go to appeals, you can actually go to court, you can go to federal court, right? I mean, there's quite a few levels in there. The end of the end of the end is judge. It's judiciary, right? So it's actually a legal court where the IRS has to prove their side, you prove your side, the judge makes the decision. Then there's appeals after that. So, I mean, what I can tell you, and this is just based on our experience, right? Up and through now, we've written a little over 3,700 tax plans, right? These big, huge 800 page with all the details, all the things. We've ever only had two of them that were audited. Both of those were what are called no change, meaning the IRS approved of absolutely everything. And I think that goes back to, you know who you're dealing with, right? So do the research on your professional team. Make sure that you read the reviews and talk to their clients and see what kind of advice they're going to give you to make sure that you as a client feel comfortable with that team. Because if you're a 0, but the tax planner, like me, I'm an 8, I can come down to a 0, but that might still be too much for you. So
if you get sort of using a bag of astrophysics metaphors, if you look at the Higgs boson, for example, the discovery of the Higgs boson, which opened up an entirely new area of particle physics. Cryptocurrencies, different types of monetary instruments. What do you see that doing in terms of destabilizing or changing, you know, the way that tax rules are written? Will there need to be much more collaboration? Is it likely to result in far greater regulation? So, you know, what are you seeing in terms of the impact of devices like cryptocurrencies, which are sort of changing the way that value changes hands?
Well, I'm smiling because you're absolutely correct. I mean, the IRS formed a very particular task force specifically for cryptocurrencies. I believe it was back in 2008, so a little bit ago now. But the IRS is a big, massive beast. They don't change things quickly. The rules that they put into play are effectively treating crypto just like any other stock. You own Google, you own BTC, it's the same thing. We're looking at it the same way. So I do think what's going to happen is you're going to get arguments, you're going to get these court cases going up the chain, but it's going to be years. There may not be any change to the current look and taxation of crypto for 10 years? I mean, it's a great question, but...
I'm thinking more on an international basis as money flows internationally. Are we likely to see more tax regulation operating on an international basis with, you know, rather than each country taxing, you know, transfers within that country? Are you seeing any sort of seismic developments in taxation regulations that have been brought about by changes in technology such as crypto?
Not yet. And I think that's the piece of the answer, is that the governments, generally, governments are not fast to change. They're not fast to move. We've had the rules on the international transfers forever, right? The likelihood they're going to change anytime soon, in my honest opinion, is even less than internal to the US. Now, I do know they're focused on it. They're looking at it, right? But I think no matter what, you're going to get court law, you know, case law that's going to point this direction or that direction based on whatever's happening at the time. So I think the biggest thing right now is what they're trying to track. And they started doing that, of course. There's specialty forms for tracking off-seas accounts, offshore accounts. They've been really pushing that a lot. And I think one of the areas where especially cryptocurrency people are going to get hit, and they don't know they're going to get hit, is that crypto can often be held in offshore servers, offshore accounts. If you don't report that, the US government at the moment gets pretty cranky about that, like $10,000 per account per year, kind of cranky.
Yeah, and so, it's a factor, I think. Is that right? Or foreign?
Yeah, the FBAR. Yeah, it's either FinCEN or the FBAR. Yeah, foreign bank account recognition, effectively.
Which is very similar to FUBAR, which...
Which is how the thing worked.
Which is something, you know.
Yes. Well, yeah. And I think that's, we're seeing a lot of people, especially in the crypto space, get tripped up, because you'll have a guy, had a case myself, guy was working, you know, he was a software engineer. He was making $50,000 a year, put $3,000 into Ethereum way back when. Well, now his portfolio is $140 million. Okay. He's not trained. He's not a financial expert. This is not, you know, and so unless you have an advisor that's like, hey, warning symbol, you know, we got to go look at this and let's go double check that. The IRS is going to come up with a ton of these cases. And, you know, you open that little Pandora's box and now they're into everything you own. So.
Yeah. And again, that's the other thing, isn't it? It's the potential for strategies to go to open up this sort of can of worms. So what is your most interesting assignment, or something that, is there a particular species of sort of question that really resonates with you? Is there a particular area of tax law?
I think one of my favorites, and I'm going to say this very broadly, but I'll come to an example. I think one of my favorites is getting people what they want. That really just makes me happy. So for example, okay, had one client, he really wanted to buy a yacht. This was his dream. He'd wanted it forever and ever and ever and ever, right? Ever since he was a little boy, he wanted to buy a yacht, a big yacht. So because of the way we structured his stuff, we were able to help him buy a $1.9 million yacht and write the whole thing off, which is awesome. I had one, it always brings me to tears when I think about it, had a mom who came into my office. We were writing a tax plan about her business, about other things. And she called me one day and said, I can't focus on this right now. I just found out that my 5-year-old son has cancer. And because she had a business, because we were in the middle of writing a tax plan, we were able to set up a medical plan where her company could pay for all of the expenses for her son. It makes me feel like a superhero. Yes. Is the best thing that I can phrase. But that's what makes me happy about this, is when somebody gives me a clear and direct goal, this is what I want. Great. Let's do it. Let's figure it out. There's always a way to get there. So we just have to get, how do we get there?
What are the biggest challenges? So the ability to interpret and have positive outcomes like that, but there's the yin and yang. There's always the flip side. So what are the biggest challenges that you face in this type of business?
I think the biggest one is I can tell you what to do, but the client has to actually do it, right? And that seems to be a problem with a lot of professional services, attorneys, tax strategists, right? We can lead the horse to water, but you can't force it to drink. So we see this often, and especially this time of year, you know, coming into the end of the year and the beginning of the next year, we can tell you what to do, but if you don't get it accomplished by December 31st, this year's over. Like, that's it. You're done, right? So pick up the champagne and start it on January 1st. You know, it's next best thing. But yeah, I think that's one of the biggest frustrations that I see, and the biggest roadblock is people themselves. So.
And do you see any change in the approach of the regulatory bodies, you know, IRS and, you know, FinCEN and all these other government entities. In terms of their approach, has it been pretty static over the years? Do you work very much hand in glove with them, or is the relationship beginning to sort of pull apart? Do they become more aggressive over time?
I'll phrase it this way. Every time there's a court case, the IRS has one extra point or piece of fact to now be able to go after other people if the taxpayer lost that court case, right? So I think the biggest thing, and one very, very important piece, is, again, knowing who you're working with, right? So good or bad, let's phrase it this way. CPAs, so I'm a CPA as well, okay? CPAs are generally known to be extremely trustworthy. When they rank us in professional organizations and articles, they talk about your CPA is your trust, right? I mean, that is what it is. So the same thing happens with the IRS, right? If you can actually call the IRS and ask for the documentation about a certain provider, right? So about a certain CPA, have they done bad things? Have all their clients been audited? Have they been making bad decisions? You know, you can look at all of that. So as a CPA, as a tax strategist, one of the things that we try to protect a lot is also, to be honest with you, my CPA license, right? Mm. How good do I look to the IRS or the state agencies? Because if a client comes to me and I'm in the bad with the IRS, the client will get audited, right? And so I think that goes back to earlier where I was saying we've only ever had 2 out of 3,700, both were no change. The IRS doesn't bother my clients, don't get bothered by the IRS. But it very much depends. You're talking about that relationship and where does the IRS go to hunt for money first? They're going to go to the lowest hanging fruit. Bad CPAs that they know are bad, right? They're going to go look at their clients first. A specific article had just come out. This all relates to COVID, right? The IRS got hit with COVID just like everybody else, okay? They lost something like 70% of their workforce. Yeah. They just can't work, not going to work. The systems, they're so far behind in their technology. The systems weren't ready for work at home, you know, these kinds of things. So an article was just released specifically from the IRS saying, we're really only going to audit people that make more than $10 million for the next couple of years because that's the staff we have. That's what we can do. So I think there's a huge opportunity there for the little guys, right? To get in, get your feet wet, start getting comfortable with these strategies. Because if you start now, you're also building a trend as you continue to grow. These are strategies we've been doing for 3-4 years.
To most people, the IRS is a huge, scary, faceless organization.
Yeah.
With your time, though, dealing with them, is there a human face to the IRS?
There is always a human face to the IRS. Now, I do think it depends. The answer in my world is always it depends. To everything, it depends. Okay. If you get what's called a desk audit, it's literally a machine printing out a letter. At some point, you'll put together documents, you send it back. You'll probably never actually speak to another human, right? But when you get into the types of strategies that we look at, there's a human and we know them and we have their telephone number. We can talk to each other. Hey, I've got a question about this. I want to make sure I'm doing this right. Yeah, you're good. We're good. Okay, great. We're all good, right? Yeah, I really think it does depend on, again, what are you doing? Where on that aggression scale are you? How much fight do you want to put into it? It always makes me smile when I ask that aggression question and clients go, I want to be at a 20. I'm like, I'm not going to jail. We're dragging you back to an 8 right here. Here's where we're stopping. Yeah. You know, I think that comes along with, as you're saying, I've been doing this now for 17 years. I know just a few of the IRS agents, right? So
what would you say would be the biggest wake-ups or the areas where you've been surprised over the last, you know, 17 years that you've been working?
I mean, to be honest, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? People do look at the IRS as a big, scary, well-oiled machine. Not so much. You'll get cases where you've been calling and speaking to IRS agents for 3 years and cases still aren't resolved, right? And they're little easy things. They're not big, complex things. You get a lot of the left hand and the right hand don't talk to each other. The one that's a little heartbreaking right now is, you know, because the IRS is low on staff, they're low on all these things. The people that deserved refunds, you know, that had refunds allowed for their return, aren't getting the refunds. They're getting partial refunds. They're getting notices that say, well, you don't deserve that refund, but they do. This is, unfortunately, has come to the point where parts of it are broken. And that's now, you know, it's trickling down, right? That's now causing issues because people don't have the cash they thought they were going to have to live or whatever it is with this COVID mess. So,
but does that create a new model though? Does that, so again, from your sort of your modeling strategy, are you now having to factor that, and you mentioned earlier about the 10 million limit, but are you able to take that information and say, well, actually the IRS has now metamorphosized into something different. So we need to take this strategy to be able to benefit from that sort of changing situation.
Absolutely. Well, even little things, right? So it always used to be, I always used to tell clients, you know, it'd be better if we were close to break even, but a little tiny refund is okay, right? You really don't want a $100,000 refund because the government's getting an interest-free loan on your money, right? Well, now my thought has shifted, right? We don't want to completely underpay, but we probably want to get still pretty close, but under a little bit, right? It's okay to owe them a little bit of money because we might be waiting. We might have to go chase them. We might have to go do whatever. If you owe the IRS money, they will let you know immediately that you owe them money. So they're generally, it's now that's a change that has come about.
So that system, so what you're saying is that part of the machinery has had the most oil. So that piece works. So
the government funded the people collecting money, absolutely.
So yes, you know, so you're factoring that it's going to cost you a little bit more. But I don't think there's anything illegal about being behind on your taxes as long as you're sort of, you know, paying the interest and, you know,
meeting. I was about to say there might be interest and penalties, but as long as you pay them, I friendly call the IRS the mafia, right? They will come after your kneecaps if you don't pay them, but otherwise they're fine. Just pay them. So,
and again, that's what I think a lot of people don't understand is that you can owe them money, they can owe you money. But I think so the two are sort of equivalent, aren't they? So if you owe the IRS money, then there are rules associated with that, but it's not de facto illegal to be. You know, behind on your taxes. In fact,
and you're right.
Part of the strategy.
There's that. And we get that question all the time. I haven't paid them in 3 years. I'm terrified. Are they going to come to my house and swat me? And I'm like, no, honey, you're good. Yes. We've got people owing them a lot more money than you are. You're totally fine. So yeah, it can be terrifying. As you said earlier, you know, the IRS is a big, bad monster hiding in the shadows. Not if you've got a goddess team protecting you or whatever, well, whatever say, your CPA team, you know, I mean, so.
Well, you've got a team of 62 people, you say. So you are you rapidly expanding in terms of taking on new clients who are trying to navigate these new relatively uncharted waters?
Yeah, you've got it. Well, and that's really what it is. You know, I personally live in Scottsdale, Arizona. So, you know, Tax Goddess as a company, when I started, it began in Arizona. But now we're seeing, we've got clients in all 50 states. We've got clients in 14 countries that are still, you know, they're U.S. citizens, but they live somewhere else. So we help clients across the country. And I think the biggest place, of course, places that we're seeing, New York, California, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, right? All the high income tax states are fleeing, right? Like, what do we do? I mean, California, you're now at 63% tax in the highest tax brackets.
Yeah.
63. Anyway, breaks my heart. But yeah, those are the people that are calling right now.
And so and it's not so much that, but it's just it's the differentials between one state and another state.
Huge. Yeah, I mean, the maximum if you live in Texas or Florida is 37%. So 37 versus 63.
There's a lot of money to pay for a bit of sunshine.
A lot of money.
Is it a burden now? Are you finding that the, you know, having to, yes, do you have hierarchies of goddesses? So are you now in Mount Olympus because you're the sort of boss goddess and you've got...
I love it. I have tried calling some of my staff demigod, demigoddess. You know, I've been trying to...
Does that not increase expectations of, you know, delivery from your clients? You know,
A little bit. But, you know, they should have...
Do you have tax devils?
No, we know who that is. That's the dark side, honey. That's a totally different end of it. I'm very, very lucky from that standpoint because of the way that I've built the organization. You know, we're 100% digital. So I've been able to hire the top talent from around the globe in any particular field that I need as a part of our team. So it's actually really kind of cool to see. I love the fact that I've got people smarter than myself in the company. It really just makes me very happy.
So. Well, I would have thought that COVID and people's willingness to grow a business remotely, I mean, has that helped?
Before COVID, of course, you know, we've been all digital now for 7 years. So we've been doing the Zoom thing, the Slack thing, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. And it actually led to two primary things. One, new prospects weren't quite as strange about getting on a Zoom meeting versus sitting across the desk, which was really nice. But the other side of that is it's also massively increased the speed of communication.
Yeah.
Because we, for example, use Slack. We love Slack. Every yes. single one of our clients has a Slack channel. They can just upload stuff from their phone.
There are good things that came out of the pandemic. It is that Absolutely. Complete sort of recentering or re-engineering of people's abilities to do business online.
It's been way too much fun. That and the fact that I get to help other CPAs, other professionals go digital.
Yes.
Because half of them had no clue. They files.
Because the lack of physicality means you can't use your sort of weapons. So
I think that's why people think they're safe. That's a good, good question.
There must be the digital equivalent of the Chinese head cutter offer. Well, I think now would be a good time, Shauna, to sort of skip into the Hooked on Startups quickfire questionnaire.
I love it. Okay.
So fasten your safety belt and scream if you want to go faster.
Okay.
And let's see how the Fireflies AI note taker deals with this. Here we go. Question number one. What is your favorite word?
Ice cream.
Question number two. What is your least favorite word?
Instant word is slice.
Question number three. What are you most excited about right now?
My bunny rabbits.
Do they know this?
I think so. They get extra love and extra pets all the time. So I would think so.
Lucky things. Question number four. What turns you off right now?
Oh, people that don't do what they say they're going to do.
Question five. What sound or noise do you love?
My snoring German Shepherd. I love it. Love it.
And question six. What sound or noise do you hate?
The vacuum getting stuck on the carpet tassels.
Question seven, and you may plead the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution on this. What is your favorite curse word?
Well, fuck.
To question number eight, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Teacher.
And what profession would you not like to attempt?
Kindergarten teacher.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. You know, my final question then. If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You're going to make me cry. All your puppies are waiting for you.
Oh, isn't that fabulous?
I'm a big softie.
Well, Shauna, it's been such a joy having you on. How do people find out how to contact you and how to take advantage of this huge amount of knowledge and experience that you have?
You're so sweet. Well, thank you. Yeah, the easiest place to find us is taxgoddess.com. So we have YouTube and Twitter and TikTok and all those things. Just search Tax Goddess on Google and you'll find us right away.
And I have a sneaking suspicion that I will be hot on that list of people contacting you soon. So, you know, thank you for opening up all of our eyes to some of the most, you know, intricate workings of the tax system and how you can rise above it and guide people through uncharted, choppy waters.
Well, my pleasure. And it's been such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Stay in touch. See you soon.